This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders, Week 2. I'm your host, JT. The Atlanta Falcons come to Oakland to take on the Silver and Black. It's the home opener for the Raiders, and a big one, because the Raiders are coming off arguably their most dramatic comeback win in the last 20 to 30 years in the history of the franchise. What a win. What a decision. Everybody is still talking about Jack Del Rio's decision to go for two as the Raiders executed the two-point conversion, Carter Crabtree, and the Raiders got out of New Orleans with the final score of 35-34. It was a game that had everything. The dramatics. You saw great plays on offense. The defense struggled throughout the game, but the Raiders showed heart in the fourth quarter. I'm not talking about a lot of old Raider teams of recent years. I'm talking about any team in the NFL. When you're down 14 points in an environment like that, you just can't come back, especially when you're going up against a Hall of Fame quarterback. And considering how great of a game Drew Brees had, for Jack Del Rio and his coaching staff to come together in the fourth quarter and for the Raiders to show all that heart and win that game was incredible. Hats off to everyone on that team, especially those who might have thought the game was getting out of reach, who found a way to dig in the fourth quarter and win in front of a very hostile environment. And a shout out to all the Raider fans who made the trip. Reportedly, Bourbon Street, New Orleans was packed with a sea of silver and black. Great win for the Raiders as it gets them back to Oakland 1-0, taking in a hungry Atlanta team that's 0-1 as they lost to Jameis Winston in Tampa Bay. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. John Michaels, the sideline reporter, who's really good for the Atlanta Falcons, knows the team inside and out. He's going to join us, along with the great Lincoln Kennedy and a surprise Raider guest, one of my favorites, as we continue here. Looking back on the win at New Orleans, a couple of quick comments. Derek Carr arrived as captain comeback. We've all seen Carr have big games, 24-38, 319 yards. But his poise, with under 5 minutes to go to move the chains and to get the Raiders in a position to win that game, was flat out amazing. Jalen Richard, the 75-yard touchdown, 3 carries for 84 yards and a touchdown, incredible. And Amari Cooper, the best young wide receiver in football, 6 receptions, 137 yards, and he is off to a great start this year. So for the Raiders, a lot to build on. But looking back, this is clearly a game where the Raiders have to make adjustments. The good news is the Raiders have the number one rushing attack in the NFL after week one, 167 yards, and the number two total offense with 486 yards. The bad news is the Raiders are ranked dead last in defense. 32 out of 32, giving up 507 yards a game. Dead last in pass defense at 419 yards a game. So how do you look at this? Looking at stats like this every year, there's something called throwout statistics. You're playing on the road against a Hall of Fame quarterback. You don't look at those stats the same you would if you're eating up a rookie quarterback who has no experience. But the Raiders had problems in that game and problems that they're going to have to fix, especially in the secondary. The fact that Smith was benched in the game, Jack Del Rio sent a message that no matter if you're a free agent, you're making a lot of money, you're a starter, you could get benched if you don't have a good game. And he expects the defense to play hard all the time, and they pretty much did that entire game. Khalil Mack didn't show up in the stat sheet with the sacks the way he does, but he was being chipped. There were 3 guys on Mack most of the game. Bruce Irvin had a couple of big plays, which I thought was really important, and the Raiders are going to have to figure out what to do with DJ Hayden with the pass interference calls throughout that game in the fourth quarter in crunch time. DJ Hayden is athletic, fast, and strong, and he's got to find a way to turn on the football and make better plays because Matt Ryan's coming after him. Matt Ryan in that loss to Tampa Bay, 27-39 for 334 yards and 2 touchdowns. Every time I see Matt Ryan play, he's good for 300 yards. And Julio Jones is arguably the best wide receiver in all of football, with a wink and a nod to Antonio Brown or Dez Bryant, whoever you want to put on that list. So we're going to have to find a way, the Raiders will, to stop a big wide receiver who can make catches in the end zone via the fade, loves to go across the middle of the field, and even with a double team, has been very successful. And when it comes to Atlanta's running attack, they don't have anybody who jumps out at you. Coleman was their leading rusher for 22 yards, but expect them to really try to pound the ball at the Raiders and set up the pass. Look, that win was incredible. And Raider Nation, that gives you everything you need for the home opener to be excited about. If Jack Del Rio, Ken Norton Jr., Bill Musgrave on offense, Mike Tice. Oh, let me stop for a second. What a job by Mike Tice and the job he did with that offensive line. With two guys going out to mix and match players out there and get the most out of the offensive line. That's coaching along with really good football players. I wanted to get that into the official Raiders podcast. A former head coach in Mike Tice who had that offensive line. No panic. One guy goes down, someone else steps up, and hopefully the Raiders are a little bit healthier this week. So it's Atlanta at the Raiders. The Raiders have an opportunity to go 2-0 on the year and really build some positive momentum. The Raiders haven't been in this situation for a while. The opportunity to go 2-0 and to do it in front of their home fans. And keep an eye on Atlanta's schedule. Atlanta lost their first game. Remember, last year they started off the year 5-0. 5-0. They were the talk of the league. Now they lose to the Buccaneers. They're at the Raiders. Listen to this schedule. At Oakland, at the Saints, the Panthers, at the Broncos, at the Seahawks. So an absolutely brutal schedule, and they feel like they need this game if they're going to survive and they're going to be able to get rolling this year. They lose this game in Oakland to go 0-2. They're going to be in a really bad spot with probably the toughest schedule in all of football coming out of that. Let's get going on the official Raiders podcast. The sideline reporter for the Atlanta Falcons, who's really good, I've had him on my radio show, joins me, John Michaels from 92.9 The Game. And John, thanks for doing this. Let's go back to Atlanta's first game and the loss. Just by looking at the box score, what was the real issue here? Was it just you ran into Jameis Winston on a hot day?
For me, JT, it's pretty simple. It was called self-inflicted wounds for the Atlanta Falcons. A couple of times inside the red zone, either penalties, and the worst kind, the pre-snap penalty, where it's a lack of concentration where guys jump offside. We had a sack given up to Robert Ayers on our first trip inside the red zone on a play where Jake Matthews just flat-out whiffed. He thought he had some inside technique coming and basically saw a ghost. By the time he tried to reach back outside, Robert Ayers was around the edge. And they end up getting for a touchdown. And then you get hurt on basically a check down to Charles Sims, where the team has, Charles Sims corralled with six different Falcons. He wiggles free. 20 yards later, he's in the end zone. And unfortunately, the Falcons come up on the wrong end of a 31-24 defeat.
Well, I'm sure in your prep for the game in Oakland, you see how the Raiders had so many penalties in that game, and Jack Del Rio was talking about cleaning it up. Is that the key here for Atlanta, to cut down on the penalties and the mental mistakes? Because other than that, everybody played reasonably well?
Offensively, yes. I would agree with that statement, because you got a couple of different guys involved. Mohamed Sanu had a nice day in his Atlanta debut. Kevin Coleman was incorporated alongside Devontae Freeman. For the most part, the offensive line was okay. They did give up three sacks, but for the most part, they had a decent job of giving Matt Ryan a good pocket. Defensively, though, there were a lot of different things to work on. I know you guys are dealing with some banged-up offensive linemen. The Falcons are dealing with the fact that they can't generate a pass rush from anywhere. 19 sacks now in 17 games that Dan Quinn's been the head coach for them. They got zero on Jameis Winston. They really only had pressure a couple of times on him. Most of those were early in the game. They've got to find a way, whether it's blitzing, whether it's coming with stuff that Dan Quinn's not really accustomed to doing, to getting pressure. I watched Derek Carr. I happened to walk up at the Georgia Dome and catch the end of the fourth quarter there against New Orleans, and watching Derek Carr systematically carve the Saints up. He's a guy that scares the crap out of me. Him and Amari Cooper and all the running backs you guys play, if the Falcons' defensive front doesn't play better than it did in week one.
John Michaels joins us. Well, that's similar. It really is similar to what happened to Oakland and New Orleans. Going into that game, the Raiders were very concerned about Drew Brees. He had a monster game. He had a 98-yard touchdown. The Raiders' secondary got torched for a lot of that game, but then you mentioned Carr. Carr was willing to put the team on his back and do whatever it took to win that game, especially Jack Del Rio, as you know, going for two to win that game. But Raider fans understand that Matt Ryan is a future Hall of Famer. His stats are unbelievable. From the time he came into this league, the job security that he's had in Atlanta, where is he, in your opinion, in the prime of his career? Is he still in the middle of it, on the back end? Where is Matt Ryan coming into this game?
You know, JT, it's hilarious that you say that Raiders fans look at him that way. If you polled 100 Falcon fans right now in Atlanta, 85 of them want Matt Ryan run out of town. They blame him more so than anybody, maybe outside of Kyle Shanahan for last year, for the Falcons' failures the last few years when they won four, six, and then eight games. Many people think Matt Ryan is one of the more overrated players in all of the NFL. I'm here to tell you I don't agree with that sentiment. I think Matt Ryan is a top 10 type of quarterback, depending on who's playing when and what list you decide to put together. I think Matt Ryan's right there. He's still in the prime of his career. You saw in week number one a guy that spent some time with quarterback coaches. He actually spent some time with some major league pitchers during the offseason to work on his arm strength. He looked like he had a little bit more mobility this year than he did in the past. He had no turnovers in week number one and really didn't have any bad throws. Couple in behind receivers, but that's to be expected when you're getting hit as you let the football go. I think Matt Ryan's a guy that, when protected with the weapons that this team has, can be a quarterback that's right up there top five or six statistically. But there's a lot of things around him that need to happen. I think the biggest gripe with Matt Ryan is he hasn't had, in the playoffs, that signature moment outside of maybe Seattle in 2012. Been a really good regular season quarterback. Unfortunately, this fan base here does not appreciate Matt Ryan for the quarterback that he is.
Yeah, and I can understand that because you want to win playoff games. We deal with this a lot with Phillip Rivers in San Diego, and look at the career he's had. For Matt Ryan coming into this league in 2008 and to be sitting with over 33,000 yards and to have all those attempts and 204 touchdowns in his career and 107 interceptions, I just know that when he has that clean pocket that he could step up. Now, clearly, Julio Jones is the best player out there, and his ability to get open across the middle of the field, which is a problem for Oakland, or getting behind the secondary, which was a problem for Oakland in New Orleans. I would assume, I guess you are on both coaching staffs, that Jones is going to have to be double covered by the Raiders if they're going to slow him down.
Yeah, you'd probably like to think so. And Tampa did a good job bracketing him a lot. They'd have Brent Grimes in front of him, sometimes Vernon Hargraves, and they were keeping a safety on his side. That did open up a lot for Mohamed Sanu. Here's the biggest issue. Julio Jones tweaked the same ankle that he tweaked in preseason. Dan Quinn spoke today on our radio station, 92.9 The Game here in Atlanta, and said, you know, limited today, hope to be back in practice tomorrow. Well, the same thing happened to Mohamed Sanu on the second to last play of the game. He went to make an in cut on a post route and kind of had the turf monster reach up and grab him. And unfortunately, he's dealing with the same ankle injury. So the hope for the Falcons is both of these guys will be healthy. If they're healthy, what Mohamed Sanu brings is a younger version of what Roddy White is, a big-bodied guy that can go catch it. He looked like a guy that was worth the money that they paid him in the offseason, which a lot of us questioned. We saw the numbers in Cincinnati and just said, okay, this guy's been pedestrian. But he made the most of his opportunities a week ago, had a big 59-yarder early on in the game. And the Falcons, I almost thought that they underused Julio Jones in week number one. Look for him and Matt to come out, if they're healthy, which I'm assuming they are, and try to exploit the Raiders down the field. Because if Brandon Cooks can run by guys, Julio Jones will sprint past them just as quickly.
John Michaels is our guest sideline reporter from the Atlanta Falcons. Lincoln Kennedy, the Raiders sideline reporter, is going to join us next on the official Raiders podcast. John, what's the calling card for this defense? Who are the best players on the defense, and what do the Raiders have to worry about, especially Derek Carr?
Well, the number one guy they have to worry about is Desmond Trufant, defensive back. Desmond Trufant is probably a top six or seven corner in the league, can play either zone or man. Not going to hit you really hard, but he's a guy that sticks to you like glue. He'll just come up flat out and play man-to-man, and obviously he's going to have a big assignment when matched against Amari Cooper. He's number one on the list to watch. Watch two young players as well, Devondre Campbell and Deion Jones, the fourth and second round pick respectively of the Falcons. These guys flashed a week ago. Dan Quinn drafted both of them to be sideline-to-sideline guys that can go make tackles. Dan Quinn loves to play cover three. He loves to get pressure with his front four. Well, that means you need linebackers that can run. Both of those guys popped a week ago. And on the D-line, if there's a player to watch interior, Grady Jarrett You may recognize the name, played at Clemson, fifth rounder a couple of years ago. Grady graded out really well a week ago. Guy that can stop the run and can also get pressure on the interior. Those would be the four players I'd really watch for on Sunday afternoon.
We spoke a couple of weeks ago on the radio about the new stadium that you have coming up. And obviously, you know the situation with Oakland, trying to secure a stadium in Oakland or Las Vegas, whatever happens long term. But that's not a problem in Atlanta. And I'd like you to tell the global Raider fan base, what's this like? So, because since the Raiders have played at the Oakland Coliseum, the Falcons have played in the Georgia Dome, and obviously this new stadium that's coming online, from what you're telling me, will be right up there with Jerry's World in Dallas, especially that roof. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely, JT. It's going to be one of the more phenomenal. It may not be the best only because Dallas is so over the top. And I told you on the other show, I was lucky enough to go out there and see Dallas a year ago. Everybody looks at the Jumbotron, but what the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium is going to be here in Atlanta, photo-like lens will be the shutter. So you can open it up on a day like today where it's 95 degrees here in Atlanta and enjoy. When it does get cold here, and judging by some of the ice storms we've had in the past, Georgians don't react very well to cold weather. You close the top and it's a dome. They'll have a 360-degree video board and scoreboard up around the upper roof, which is going to be awesome. He also has a 100-yard bar, which for somebody like me on the days that I don't work during the NFL, I love to be able to have a cocktail or 10 at a game. They've got a 100-yard bar inside the stadium. And the coolest, maybe the coolest thing that Arthur Blank did of all of this, he put affordable food at price points of $1 and $2. So $1 hamburger, $1 popcorn, $2 sodas with free refills. That's something where the common fan doesn't have to walk in and go, man, I've got to spend another $100 in food here. Arthur Blank is pulling out all the stops. Nice to have an owner that's willing to pony up $800 million of his own money to put a beautiful facility in place.
We're wrapping it up with John Michaels, the sideline reporter for the Falcons. Finally, I look at the schedule of the Falcons. This is a monster game because you're opening up on the road in the black hole when you go on the road. And you look at this team and what they're able to do in Oakland. This is a rabid fan base, and they are going to be sold out and packed because the Raiders are coming home with one of the most dramatic regular season wins in the history of this franchise. And that says a lot. After the game in Oakland, the Falcons are at New Orleans, which is always a big shootout. Then Carolina, at Denver, at Seattle. I mean, at Denver and at Seattle on October 9th and 16th is brutal. So does it feel like a sense of urgency that the Falcons have to get this win because the schedule gets brutal after that?
Absolutely. I said preseason, if we went 3-3 to start the year, going through that stretch that you just talked about, including Tampa, I think everybody in Falcon Nation would be ecstatic. Well, now you're 0-1 and 0-1 in division. The Raiders game is gigantic because the New Orleans game a week later is the 10th anniversary of the reopening of the Superdome after Hurricane Katrina, a game in which they beat the Falcons like 37-0. Steve Gleason had the punt blocked. The Superdome basically exploded. We're walking into a hornet's nest there. Then you get Cam Newton coming back in the place that he lost his only regular season game a year ago. Obviously here in Atlanta, and then two more West Coast games against a really good Denver team and a really good Seattle team. It's going to be hard-pressed. So the Falcons know the sense of urgency starts now. You don't make the playoffs in September, but they can be out of the playoffs in September if things still break real quickly.
Exactly. The next four games for the Falcons, at Oakland, at New Orleans, Carolina, at Denver, at Seattle. Those are five games that are really brutal. We'll see what happens. John, I'll see you on the sideline. Enjoy your trip out west. We appreciate it.
All right, JT. Thanks as always.
Lincoln Kennedy joins us. And Lincoln, thanks for coming on. And tell me where you rate that game all time since you've been on this side in the media on the sideline in New Orleans.
Well, I think it's tough.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time the Raiders were on a winning game of a shootout quite like that. There's been many heartbreaks in my experience with the Raiders, both as a player and, of course, covering them as part of the media. So I think it's at all-time high, bud.
Well, Lincoln, I can imagine with you, being with you on the sideline and seeing how you're able to interact live with Coach and Greg Papa, and that's what I love about what you do, is Greg's able to seamlessly throw it down to you. You talk when you're ready. And how frustrated were you when you were seeing the offensive linemen not only get nicked up and injured, but knowing that the Raiders were having a really difficult time in that secondary stopping Drew Brees?
Well, there's no doubt it was going to try to figure out how the outcome was. I didn't know at first, especially when the Raiders were down by double digits. I thought it bleak, the likelihood they'd be able to return, especially with all the, as you mentioned, aforementioned things that were working against them. So I was really surprised that they were able to pull it together. I thought it was smart by putting Osemele over at left tackle, which he had some experience playing in Baltimore, his years in Baltimore. So he was okay there. And then, of course, moving Donald Penn to right tackle. And what was funny, I watched Donald because I was just trying to see how he was able to adjust. The very first couple of snaps he went out there, he was doing it from a left-handed stance. And I got tickled by that because it took him a while to sort of readjust his mind. And I remember also after, you know, another series that was coming out in the field, he was going to his normal place in the huddle on just to the left of Derek Carr as far as the left tackle was. And he went over there and looked at over the line like, wait a minute. Oh, he slapped his helmet like, yep, I'm on the right side right now. So it's adjustments like that make the professionals a little bit stronger. And it was just some cute things that I noticed from watching the line.
Lincoln Kennedy's our guest. You know, Lincoln, looking at the game notes here, it's just amazing. It reminds me of a little bit of the past for the Raiders, because when something is going strong statistically, then they come back. And if you look at their defensive rank, they're ranked 32nd in total defense. They're ranked 32nd in pass defense. To you, is that a big problem or something that Del Rio talks about just cleaning it up? Because when Smith got benched and DJ Hayden's getting those PI calls on him, a lot of Raider fans are saying, okay, this could happen in one game, but we don't want to see a pattern here. Do you believe that the Raiders coaching staff will be able to fix this with the personnel they have?
I don't want to see a pattern as well as the Raider Nation, but I am a little concerned. And I use the word concerned because here's the thing. I think the Raiders struggled in preseason to sort of to build their identity. I think overall what Ken Norton and Del Rio are trying to do there is establish a defense quite like the one that they had in Seattle. The only problem with that is you don't have the personnel, and that's going to take time to build. So whether you're using, you know, Smith or using DJ Hayden or some, you know, combination of that, one thing they got to do, and this is why I think it has to separate them, the other people other than the stars have got to win their one-on-one matchups, JT. Somebody else has got to rise to the top. It can't always rely on Khalil Mack or you know, Mari Cooper or some of the notable stars to get it done, because those guys are being double-teamed, and those guys are trying to be taken out of effect. So we've got to find somebody, especially on this defense, to raise up. More importantly, they're going to play coverage. One, they got to generate a pass rush, so you're going to have four guys come alive. It can't just be all on Khalil Mack's shoulder. But secondly, when you gamble with pressure-style defense in the sense where you're, you know, pressing those receivers, you got to make sure they don't get off the line cleanly. Because if they do, that's exactly what happened in the New Orleans game. They get beat.
Lincoln Kennedy joins us on the official Raider podcast. Well, the good news for the Raiders is they're ranked number one in the NFL. I know it's only after one game. Rush offense, 167 yards. Rashard had 84 yards, the big touchdown on that long 75-yard run. I thought Latavius ran really hard, 59 yards, 4.2 per carry. And then Olawale with the touchdown. And I love DeAndre Washington and what he brings to the table. So more of a running back by committee, Lincoln, or Latavius is still the feature back? And Rashard is just some guy that's going to come in from time to time and explode.
I think it has to be running back by committee. Latavius Murray's running style doesn't really, you know, prove for longevity standards. You know, he runs so upright and he's had some issues with injuries in the past. I think that works against him. So I believe personally it's running back by committee. But also you look at what Jalen Rashard and the names that you mentioned, the changeup that they do, because you've been able to, you know, scamper out of the backfield with some quick passes or things like that. And the defense can't really key in on one guy. So I think it should be running back by committee.
Lincoln, as we wrap this up, what did it mean to you when you were drafted out of college, your storied career at Washington, All-American, you go high in the draft to Atlanta? Take our listeners behind the scenes. What did that mean to you and your family at that time in your life, the accomplishment as a football player, making that money, and being sought out around the league as one of the great young offensive linemen in football?
You know, what's interesting, JT, is that when I was playing football, I really never, ever imagined that I was that good. So I was surprised in my junior and senior year to hear people even talking about the NFL draft. With that being said, when it came to be, I wanted my only goal wasn't never, not so much the team I go to, but I wanted to be the first tackle taken. Now, Willie Rofe, the great Willie Rofe, Hall of Famer, was taken one pick before me by New Orleans. And I went to Atlanta with the number 9 pick. Still, it's definitely something to be commended to be drafted number 9 in the National Football League. So I'm definitely pleased with that. But all in all, when I look back on my career, what really made a difference for me was the fact that Al Davis, may he rest in peace, noticed me when I was coming out of college, walking up. I never first met him walking up the ramp from the East-West Shrine game over when we were practicing at Stanford. And he told me one day that I was going to be a Raider. And I didn't have the most pleasurable experience when I was playing for Atlanta. But when I did come over to the Raiders, I was able to play the type of football which I come to know and respect and appreciate. And then my success as a professional was deemed off of that. So within that time frame, JT, I met a tremendous group of guys, got friends, lifetime friends. There's no doubt about it. And then, of course, I had a chance, the opportunity to play in a Super Bowl, which probably would have never happened if I was in a Falcon uniform. So my career is storybook and it's history, and I enjoy it thoroughly. And now still being involved with the Raiders allows me to carry on my career in just a different aspect.
Finally, Lincoln, Atlanta comes to town, sold-out house, home opener. It's going to be incredible. The Raider fans have been waiting for this, and now they really believe that this is a playoff team. What do you expect to see from Atlanta, knowing that Matt Ryan puts up big numbers? Julio Jones is looking at that film of the Raider defense and the adjustments that Coach Del Rio and especially Ken Norton Jr. have to make to slow down Atlanta.
Well, one of my definite keys to the game is you've got to find where Julio Jones is on that field and make sure you take him out of the equation. Force this team to be a one-dimensional, though they can put up some decent numbers running the ball. I think they're not as dangerous as impactful. Dangerous if you're able to shut down the pass and make them one-dimensional. With that being said, I also want to see this offense take some shots downfield. I think Atlanta's defense is susceptible to it, a little young defense like New Orleans was. But I don't want this team to get into a shootout, so I'm hoping the defense is able to come alive. I think they will with the Raider Nation backing them at Oakland Coliseum.
You're the best, Lincoln. Thanks for coming on the official Raiders podcast. I'll see you Sunday.
Anytime, JT. Take care, brother. See you soon.
Let's get going here as we welcome Marquette King, the great punter of the silver and black, to the official Raiders podcast. King, you're my guy, and you love punting in the dome. Tell us about the experience in the dome.
Man, what's going on, my man? Well, right now I'm sitting in the sun with my triceps out and looking at this little mirror. Triceps looking real good. But, man, I had a lot of fun in the dome. Like I said, man, it's real easy to punt in there. As a matter of fact, I mishit a 50-yard punt, so that was kind of cool. At least I didn't have to really stress about making perfect contact with the ball because the weather wasn't bad at all.
Well, we talked about that in the preseason when I asked you that on the sidelines about going to New Orleans. You were really excited to get there. There were Ray Guy stories about his Hall of Fame career and what it was like to play and how they had to move the scoreboard. What was it like for you in warmups with that big crowd and the dome and the scoreboard while you were going through practice getting your reps in?
Man, it was cool, man. You can definitely feel the energy and everything. Everybody's ready. And it kind of felt like a little party atmosphere like it always does, but not like it does out here in Oakland. But, shoot, man, I hung the ball up in the air during 1 month, but I didn't really try to hit the Mercedes sign because it was just so high. It was almost like, man. If we were in Dallas now, I probably would have put a dent in the scoreboard a couple of times. But not in New Orleans. They raised that up a little bit higher.
Hey, I saw you on SportsCenter and all the highlight shows as you were doing the little shoulder shake. You were playing to the crowd there. You were pretty confident. But on a serious note, and Marquette King joins us, what was that like, the halftime speech? I don't need the specifics, but we know how coaches can get after you when you're down in a game. And it was 1 point down 14. Going into the half in a manageable score of 17-10, how your coaches were able to instill confidence in you to get back in that game?
I mean, you know what? It wasn't that big of a speech. It was more of you can tell the coaches had faith in all the play, the offense, the defense, and the special teams. Like, they didn't really have to say much. Like, we knew how we needed to handle our fish and stuff. So that's exactly what we did. I mean, we did what they knew that we could do.
Yeah, what is it like after a game like that when it's so emotional? It comes down to a 2-point conversion, and then all of a sudden you're back in your locker. The media's there all around you. You're celebrating. You're happy. And then you got to get on that plane. You've been on those plane rides before. This one must have been special because that game, even though you didn't think it was out of reach, a lot of people around the league thought it was. To come back and have that experience in the locker room with your teammates after the game, tell us about that celebration.
Oh, man, it felt like we had a party on the airplane, man. It was it was fun, man. People were excited. and just celebrating doing what we needed to do. I mean, like I said, everybody knew what we could do. Everybody knew that had an idea of what to do. The coaches got faith in us to execute all of our assignments. So, I mean, it was a great feeling, man.
We're wrapping it up with Marquette King, the punter for the Oakland Raiders, on the official Raiders podcast. Marquette, what are your personal goals? Because now everybody knows Seabass. They're starting to know you. Everybody knows you have a booming leg. You got a personality here, but they vote for the Pro Bowl, and there's a lot of other guys who do what you do in this league. What would you like to achieve outside of winning with the Raiders? What are your personal goals as a player?
My personal goals as a player is to have more fun. I feel like before this year, I was so serious and just pressing myself to be the best so hard. And this year, I was like, you know what, man, maybe I should have a little more fun. Like, don't get too serious on myself to where it's not fun and it feels like a job. Like, just enjoy myself. That's why you see me dancing around. Find a way to make the job a lot more fun. What else?
I think that's important. I'm happy you said that. I think a lot of our listeners feel the same way. When they see you out on the field, you're smiling, you're having fun, but then you're all serious when the ball is snapped and you're executing. I know this is going to be special for you, a home opener coming off a win in front of these rabid fans. I'll see you out at the Coliseum. Have another big game, and thanks for coming on the official Raiders podcast.
Hey, thank you.
You got it. There he is. Marquette King joining us here. Fantastic that we're able to talk to him. I really like what he's about. Sebastian Janikowski deserves so much credit. Obviously so. A future Hall of Famer, but King, my guy. Quick story. After the last preseason game, he came up to me. My 15-year-old son plays high school football, and he said, here are my gloves for your son. I said, wow, that is really nice that you would do that. And every time I see him, he asks him how my son's doing and how the family's doing. Really care a lot about him. He's emotional. He's a good guy. And the Raiders have one of the best punters in all of football. I love that podcast. That's the way you wrap it up with Marquette King coming in on a fly. Thanks to John Michaels, the sideline reporter for the Atlanta Falcons. The great Lincoln Kennedy, who you see and hear him on 95.7 The Game, all the excitement there. And I'm thrilled to see you. If you're coming to Oakland, I'll be there on the sidelines. Got a lot of surprises for this game for the Raider fans coming up on Sunday, the home opener. Thanks for joining us for the second official Raiders podcast with the Atlanta Falcons. We'll get you ready for the Tennessee Titans next week. I'm JT the Brick for Silver and Black Productions. Gents.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.